This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
As Joe Biden continues to flail in the polls, the White House is calling on its cheerleading squad in Hollywood. It's a tried-and-true strategy for Democrats. When the news isn't going their way, just dazzle the people with celebrities. So on Friday, old Joe brought out the big guns. That's right, you guessed it. I'm talking about Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill has decided to join us on this wonderful Friday, and I am really excited to turn it over to Mr. Hamill. Here we go.
How many of you had Mark Hamill lead the press briefing on your bingo card? Hands? Yeah, me either. And look, I just got to meet the president, and he gave me these aviator glasses. Oh, yeah.
What a treasure.
I love the merch. Love it all. But listen, I just wanted to say I was honored to be asked to come to the White House to meet the president, the most legislatively successful president in my lifetime. And, you know, I don't have to go through the list, the bipartisan infrastructure law, the PACT Act, the CHIPS Act, all of that, inflation, 15 million jobs. Look, it's all good. You know, I called him Mr. President. He said, you can call me Joe. And I said, can I call you Joe B-1 Kenobi?
Joe B-1 Kenobi. It is taking every ounce of effort I've got to prevent my face from becoming stuck in a permanent cringe. That wasn't even the worst part of the presser. The first part was even worse, when Mark Hamill slurred his way through the talking points that Biden's staff had obviously handed him. It sounded like he'd had a few too many in the cantina before even making it to the White House. But why was he there in the first place? The best the White House could do was a man whose only notable film role dates back to 1977. Even if the White House had wanted to capitalize on Star Wars Day, May the 4th, couldn't they have gotten any of the good actors from those movies? Mark Hamill was probably the weakest part of the whole original franchise. But I suspect the answer is no. Harrison Ford endorsed Biden last time, but he's MIA this cycle and would probably rather smoke a joint at his home than deal with the house plant in the White House. James Earl Jones, Darth Vader, is a Republican, as far as I can tell. He's Catholic, too. Gina Carano got canceled for not being woke. Peter Cushing's dead, which I guess actually makes him the most likely of the cast to vote for Biden. Yoda's an alien. Same story for him. This is the best they've got, not only in the Star Wars universe, but more broadly throughout Hollywood, where the woker celebs have turned on Biden thanks to the wedge issue of the war in Gaza. The Biden White House is in a generational political conundrum, the sort of crisis you could not wish on a more deserving hive of scum and villainy. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. Welcome back to the show. A frat star has gone viral for wearing American flag overalls and dancing around and yelling at a pro-Palestine protester. We will get to all the story at Ole Miss and the rest of the schools in a moment. First, though, go to CozyEarth.com. Use promo code Knowles. As Mother's Day approaches, there is no better time to celebrate the moms in your life. This Mother's Day, consider giving her the gift of Cozy Earth, a luxurious sleep experience she truly deserves. Cozy Earth sheets redefine luxury and comfort. Crafted from viscose bamboo, they are temperature regulating, ensuring a restful night's sleep for both hot and cold sleepers. I absolutely love Cozy Earth. Sweet little Elisa is crazy about it. She is insisting that we get more and more versions of the sheets. The guest room, who knows, maybe we get another one for our room. Well, it's Mother's Day, maybe now is the time to do it. Treat a special woman in your life to the luxury she deserves with Cozy Earth bedding and sleepwear. She deserves it. Don't forget to use promo code Knowles at checkout for 35% off at CozyEarth.com. After placing your order, select podcast in the survey and select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. That is CozyEarth.com promo code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Speaking of those anti-Israel protesters, the Intifada at UCLA has just issued a statement that further underscores the ultimate point of all of these protests, in their own words.
You're just a white person. We don't like white people. Free Palestine!
Free Palestine! That sums it up. That's really what it's about. Maybe some of these people could point to the Palestinian territories on a map. Maybe. They now know the colors of the Palestine flag. They would probably confuse it for a Jordanian flag too, but they roughly know the colors and they wave it. But really what this is about is they hate white people and they specifically hate white men, and probably they hate their dads, is because that's really what all of liberalism is about. But that's it. It has very, very little to do with the Israel-Gaza war. It's not that the Israel-Gaza war is not an interesting political matter. It's not that it doesn't have some effect on U.S. policy. It does. It's not that it's not worth debating. It certainly is worth debating. That's not what these protests are about. It has basically nothing at all to do with it. There was another demonstration at LSU, and at LSU, the counter-protesters outnumbered the actual pro-Palestine protesters by a lot. And what were they chanting? Were they chanting, you know, here we go, Gaza, here we go, let's go, Israel, let's go? No, they weren't chanting that. It was actually the chants pertained to American politics. And the counter-protesters were chanting USA. So you see, even here, we'll get to the Ole Miss video in a second, but even here, most of the counter-protesters seem like normal frat stars wearing Nantucket Reds and that kind of thing, and they're chanting USA, USA. This reminds me so much of Occupy Wall Street. When I was in college, the big encampment, weeks, months-long protest campaign was Occupy Wall Street, which then went to all these campuses all around the country, Occupy Connecticut, Occupy California, and what was so striking about it was the issue was not necessarily left or right coded. The issue wasn't necessarily a left-wing or right-wing issue. Meaning, you know, these bankers on Wall Street manipulating the system, buying off politicians, getting themselves bailed out because their banks were too big to fail. That's not exactly the height of conservatism. It's not as though we say conservatives, we believe in life, liberty, and the total immunity of Wall Street from any consequences of their actions. That's not true. And the bankers on Wall Street and the hedge fund guys and the private equity guys, they're broadly Democrats anyway. So it's not, but it became a left-right issue, meaning the protesters were leftists and the counter-protesters were conservatives. It was coded left and right, even though the issue wasn't necessarily that. Same thing goes for the Israel-Gaza war. There are plenty of right-wing objections to Israeli policy. There are plenty of left-wing reasons to support the state of Israel. But that's just not how this is coded. The way that this is coded at all of the protests is the pro-Palestine people are leftists, they're communists, they're anarchists, they're gender studies majors who hate their dad, and they especially hate you, white man, okay? And the counter-protesters, the pro-Israel side, is normal pro-American right-wingers. And that's just it. And a lot of those guys probably can't point to Israel on a map either, but they wear their red, white, and blue overalls and they chant USA, USA because of the people involved. You know, a friend of mine says facts don't care about your feelings. There's a lot of truth to that. Politics largely cares about your feelings. And politics is largely about people. It's kind of all about people. It's not just about some policy that some wonk writes up on a white paper at a think tank. It's about people. It's about teams. It's about friends and adversaries, okay? And so in these protests, I'm not saying this is a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just making the I think, incontrovertible observation. The people protesting for the pro-Palestine side are the leftists. Therefore, the people counter-protesting are the conservatives. And most of this has nothing to do with the Middle East. So this brings us to the viral video that came out of Ole Miss, where some frat star wearing aviators, much more persuasively than Mark Hamill did, dressed up in red, white, and blue, stars and stripes, overalls, is counter-protesting a sole pro-Palestine protester. So the counter-protester is a straight white man, the worst kind of person in the world. And then the pro-Gaza protester, the pro-Palestine protester, is a black woman who is somewhat corpulent. I only observe that because a lot of the guys were chanting things like Lizzo, and they were being kind of mean about it. Now, it's a little unclear in the video what exactly people are saying. Cops are trying to break them up. They're kind of just yelling ambiguous insults. They're waving at her. I can't quite tell. The most damning video, I actually couldn't even really see it in this cut, is at one point it looks like someone's jumping around like a monkey. So some people were saying that that was a racial attack. I could have been. I just don't know. Maybe it might have just been like making fun of leftists for behaving like animals. And that had nothing to do with race. Or it could have been race. I have no idea what it was. That, first of all, I have two big observations about this. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to ramp.com/Knowles. When you're running a business, time is money, honey. That's why I'm excited to introduce you to Ramp. If you are a finance professional looking for a better way to maximize productivity and cut wasteful spending, then Ramp could be for you. Ramp is a corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and put money back in your pocket. With Ramp, you can issue cards to every employee with limits and restrictions. You can also stop wasting time at the end of every month by automating your expense reporting. Ramp's accounting software automatically collects receipts and categorizes your expenses in real time, so you don't have to. You will never have to chase down a receipt again, and your employees will no longer spend hours submitting expense reports. The time that you will save each month on employee expenses will allow you to close your books 8 times faster. Ramp is so easy to use. Get started in less than 15 minutes, whether you have 5 employees or 5,000. Now, get $250 when you join Ramp. Go to ramp.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. ramp.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. ramp.com/Knowles. Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. Two big observations and a caveat. First of all, in America, this is my caveat. In America, the left can burn the country down for 8 months on an explicitly racial campaign called Black Lives Matter that explicitly said white lives do not matter, all lives do not matter, only black lives matter, and we're going to burn the country down, we're going to murder dozens of people, we're going to loot stores, we're going to shut the country down and terrify people in their neighborhoods. And you will never hear one counter signal from the hard left. You won't, or even from the mainstream left. You're going to have the current vice president of the United States bail these guys out of prison, bail them out of jail. And you're going to have staffers for the current president bail them out of jail. So I don't want it to seem like I'm counter signaling or going squishy. We don't even know really what we're seeing in this video. But my first observation is our opponents sometimes lead us to do things that are degrading to ourselves. The perfect example of this was some years ago, there was a right-wing activist at a college campus who was protesting safe spaces, right when safe spaces were first coming to the public imagination. And so he drew up a fake safe space, and then he dressed in a diaper and, had a pacifier or something and kind of made fun of the leftists. And the observation was that the leftists are behaving like babies, but the problem was he had allowed his opponents to drive him so mad that he ended up degrading himself and dressing in a diaper with a pacifier. It didn't look good. It was kind of a self-own. So that sometimes happens. I know people get rowdy in college, but you shouldn't say nasty things to women, especially. And you want to comport yourself with some dignity, especially, this brings me to my second observation, in an age where everything is videotaped. The most striking thing about this to me was that this was not a political protest. This was not a political demonstration. This was certainly not a debate. This was two groups of people making separate, albeit interconnected movies. The most striking thing about it to me was not the pro-Palestine lady. I couldn't even hear what she was saying. For all I know, she was saying things just as nasty or nastier than what the people on the other side were saying. And the most striking thing to me was all the cameras. Every person there, just about, had a camera out and was filming. And you're going to see coverage of this today from two angles. You're going to see the left. I'll even take Israel and Palestine out of it. I didn't see any Israel flags there. I didn't see any Palestine flags there. I saw a guy wearing the red, white, and blue overalls and shrieking basically unrelated things. From the leftist side, you're going to see the narrative of poor, oppressed black woman who is standing up against the straight white males, the conservatives who oppose freedom and black people and body positivity. And she is the sole hero standing up against this vile force of bigotry. And then you're going to hear from the right wing. The hero is going to obviously be the guy in the overalls and say, this is a guy standing up for truth, justice in the American way against the barbarian hordes who support terrorism, anti-Semitism, who support DEI, radical gender theory, radical racial theories that denigrate men and white people and peddle intersectionality and degrade our forebears and our country and say our country is dirty, rotten, and evil from the beginning. And you're going to see those two stories and you're going to watch those two movies. And the two movies are going to have the exact same footage, albeit from a different vantage. A lot of these protests are not even really protests because there's nothing to be done. None of them are going to have any effect probably on policy in the Middle East. It's much closer to performance art. In the same way, I'm noticing increasingly that political commentary is increasingly divorced from what's actually going on in politics. That's why on this show I do try to bring it back to earth every so often. You know, we talk about theology, we talk about philosophy, we talk about history, but I try to ground it in actual political events that are going on right now. For a lot of political media and political commentary that's going on, I'll refrain from examples because, you know, some of them are friends and then the others are on the left, but it's totally divorced from the 2024 election, from Trump, from Biden, from policies that could possibly be put into place. It's just kind of out there in the ether and LARPing and abstract. And I'm noticing that now, even with the kind of grassroots political media that's being filmed. The stuff that's going on these campuses, it's not about pushing one policy or the other. It's performance art. It's a kind of performance art. What does that mean when your political activism is detached from the political realities of your... What it probably means is you have a government that is largely unresponsive to the people. And so there's no point in pushing for this policy or another. We know we're going to keep funding Ukraine. We're just going to do it. Every single Republican in America could be against it and half the Democrats could be against it. We're just going to keep funding it because it's part of the global empire. It's our satellite state out there in Eastern Europe and we're just going to do it. So there's no point in political activism against it most of the time. When the political activism becomes detached performance art and the actual politics is unresponsive to the people, that creates a real danger and a real political crisis. Now, speaking of actual political things going on that are tethered to the earth and also sort of the putative subject of these debates, President Trump has come out to exploit this wedge issue on the left. He's come out in opposition to the Palestinian state. What he said in a recent Time magazine interview is, I'm not sure a two-state solution anymore is going to work. Everybody was talking about two states, even when I was there. There was a time when I thought two states could work. Now I think two states is going to be very, very tough. I think it's going to be much tougher to get. I also think you have fewer people that liked the idea. You had a lot of people that liked the idea 4 years ago. Today, you have far fewer people that like the idea. There may not be another idea. Very true. His analysis of the Israel-Palestine conflict is right. There's obviously no workable two-state solution, certainly not now. The reason being that the, as I've said before and gotten in trouble for saying before, the rational grand strategy for both sides of this conflict is the ethnic cleansing of the other. They might not say it, all say it explicitly. In Israel, some politicians, but not all politicians, would say that explicitly. In the Palestinian territories, they do. They say, from the river to the sea, get rid of all the Jews. You know, it's in the Hamas charter to abolish the state of Israel. But I'm not even saying that's what the politicians are saying. I'm just pointing out that is the rational policy prescription. The Arab argument is that the state of Israel is illegitimate and they took their land and they want it back. And the Israeli argument is, this is our land. It's our land going back millennia. And then we got it again as a matter of geopolitics. And the UN said we can have a state. And that's then. We built a big state here and it's flourishing. We're not going anywhere. And we'll try. And so, you know, when maybe in the 90s you could have argued for a two-state solution. But just now, especially after the attack on October 7th, Israel's going to look at Gaza and say this is an unacceptable security risk. And the Palestinian Arabs are still going to say that the state of Israel is illegitimate. So there's just no, what's the solution? Trump says there's no solution here. So what is he actually suggesting? He's suggesting that the GOP maintain its position, and its position is broadly to be pro-Israel. I've got the charts here. This is from Pew, I think. No, it's from Gallup, sorry. America's favorability of Israel and Palestine. You can look through all of the numbers. Support for the state of Israel has plummeted among young people, especially on the left. But when you look at 35 to 54 years old and 55 plus, which are the real voters that candidates are looking at in this election, they're still broadly pro-Israel. This is 55%, even today, used to be a little higher than that, but it's still 55% of 35 to 54-year-olds and 71% of 55-plus-year-olds support Israel. Support for the Palestinian Authority, much, much lower. Even among the young people for whom support of the state of Israel has cratered, they're still more likely to support the state of Israel than they are to support the Palestinian Authority. 38 favorable to Israel, 32% favorable to the Palestinian Authority. Now, the breakdown between Democrats and Republicans is what's really key here, because what Trump is focusing on is not some conflict overseas. It's how to create a winning political coalition here in the U.S., and I think he's doing a good job. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to jpcatholic.edu/Knowles. Lib-controlled universities and entertainment establishments are two of the biggest battlegrounds for the health and sanity of our culture. John Paul the Great Catholic University in Escondido, California, offers a non-woke alternative. JP Catholic gives creative conservatives hands-on training in their craft alongside a robust liberal arts education. JP Catholic offers programs in film production, animation, screenwriting, music design, and even video games, forming the next generation of creative professionals who will bring truth, beauty, and goodness to the entertainment industry. If you are not looking for a degree but want to sharpen your skills, JP Catholic also offers free online courses. Right now, JP Catholic is offering our listeners a full application fee waiver at jpcatholic.edu/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Applications are still open for this fall with generous scholarships available. Pursue excellence in your creative craft without sacrificing your values. Visit jpcatholic.edu/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. jpcatholic.edu/Knowles. You know, when I travel to these college campuses, whether they have an intifada or some protest or whatever, often I'm protested. And then my producer, Ben Davies, goes out. He meets the protesters. Occasionally, I get to sit down with them, as I did at Utah.
Is it a safe place for your conservative students?
Of course.
How would they know that coming in here when there's a sign that literally says they are not welcome?
Now, why on earth would conservative students not feel welcome on a public university campus?
What does your sign say?
So respect existence or expect resistance.
The protesters were nearly all students in the College of Social Work. It seems very few of them had ever listened to a word that I've said.
From what I know about him, he has promoted the annihilation of trans people. I don't want to say that for sure.
When my producer, Mr. Davies, gave them the chance to discuss their views with me, pretty much all of them declined.
Personally, I have a really hard time staying cool, calm, and collected when talking to someone like that. So I think I'm going to take the high road, not even go there.
However, after the TikToks were posted and the mob felt that its objective was complete, one student decided to peek his head in. Like most students, Daniel had never actually listened to my show or to any of my speeches. He simply came to protest because his friends said he should. Because, they said, the speaker was a bad guy. Happily, Daniel decided to investigate the matter himself and crossed the picket line to hear what I had to say. Go check it out. It's on my YouTube channel. Go check out Across the Picket Line. We call the series Cross the Line right now. So Trump on Israel. He comes out, he says, two-state solution is going to be very, very hard. So he's kind of talking around it because his argument is to maintain the status quo Republican position, which is probably smart. Trump and the GOP are pro-Israel. Democrats increasingly are anti-Israel. Most of America is pro-Israel. I think that's pretty much where President Trump's reasoning begins and ends on this issue. He might have some natural sympathies for the state of Israel, but I think that's most of it, is the political calculation here. And you look at the numbers. These are very recent numbers, I think from March, from Gallup. You can see a decline in support for the state of Israel, a 9 percentage point decline among Democrats. Among Republicans, the decline in support is much smaller, 5 points. Palestinian Authority also has had a decline in support. The Middle East sympathies have largely been unchanged by the war, except for finally taking down a little bit of the Democrat support. So the Democrat support for Israel is now below 50%. Independents are still at 51%. Republicans are still at 77%. It's down across the board, but now you've got Democrats under 50%. And you've got those young Democrat people really cratering here. This is a great opportunity for Trump to exploit. And especially that it's still so contentious in the Democrat Party, and there's such a divide between the activist base and the donor class. Exploit that all you can. Trump is, as far as I can tell, just living his best life right now. After court the other day, last week, he decides he's going to go deliver pizzas to a New York fire department.
Sir, save us, please.
He goes in there, shaking hands with the guys. Save our country. One of them says, save our country, Mr. Trump. The Democrats are so dumb. I'm talking about the Democrats in New York and elsewhere in the country who are indicting him and prosecuting him. They thought this was going to stop his campaign. This is the greatest campaign opportunity imaginable. And what the Republicans will argue is, well, if Trump didn't have to defend himself in court, he could be holding rallies in Iowa. He could be, yeah, I guess that's true. He might also just be playing golf or something, though. It's still kind of early on in the year. Instead, what he's doing, and I think this is more valuable than holding the rallies in Iowa, Trump is going every day after court. He's going to that bodega in West Harlem. He's going now to the FDNY, and he's getting big support. And he's bringing them pizza, and he's going to Chick-fil-A, and he's just doing stuff that looks so good. And he's out, and it seems unscripted, and it's extemporaneous, and it's just really, this is good campaigning. The Democrats are Wile E. Coyote. Donald Trump is the roadrunner. They bought a big Acme anvil in the form of this New York prosecution, and somehow the roadrunner gets away and the anvil is falling on their head. Then, some more good news for the Republican Party. President Trump and Governor Ron DeSantis just had a little meeting over the weekend. President Trump says, I'm very happy to have the full and enthusiastic support of Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. We had a great meeting. The conversation mostly concerned how we could work closely together to make America great again. Also discussed was the future of Florida, which is fantastic. I greatly appreciate Ron's support in taking back our country from the worst president in the history of the United States. November 5th is a big day. Whoa, this is crazy. This is such a change in tone from the way that President Trump was speaking during the primary. Wow. Now, I'm not surprised by this. You're not surprised by this. But naive people in politics and people who have been driven mad by primary partisanship, they will be surprised by this. But it was so nasty. And during the primary, Mr. Trump, you said that DeSantis was a bad governor, but now you're saying he's a good governor. And during the primary, you said you hated DeSantis, but now you say you like DeSantis. Yeah. Yeah, man. It's called politics. I don't... You know, my position, I feel so vindicated. We'll get to what DeSantis said about the meeting in a second. My position early on in the primary, I said, I'm not going to wait into the primary. I very rarely wait into Republican primaries. I don't see the point because I don't think that's my role in my position in media and politics. So I'm just going to call it like I see it. And I'm going to cover Trump and I'm going to cover DeSantis. And I said nice things about both guys. And I said tough things about both guys. And I covered the other candidates too. And I said, look, these are both tough guys. They got thick skin. They can handle a primary. Don't worry. Don't be shedding tears about, oh no, Trump said this about DeSantis. And oh, poor, is DeSantis okay? You know, and, oh, DeSantis said this about Trump. The tough guys, they'll work it out. So here's what DeSantis said. DeSantis said he's going to be active in a variety of capacities to help Trump and the other Republicans win this fall. It was a good meeting and a good conversation. He, Trump, understands the importance of this election. He understands the damage that Biden is doing. And I think you would see 180-degree different policies if we're able to win in November, which is important to do. There you go. For all that we hear about Donald Trump being a narcissist who can't take any criticism, who's just, he holds grudges and this. This guy seems to take nothing personally. He takes loyalty very seriously. He takes whether you're his friend or his enemy very seriously at any given time. But he doesn't seem to take insults personally at the very least. He knows this is politics. To quote Hyman Roth in The Godfather Part 2, this is the business we've chosen. That's what it is. And so, the minute that Trump gets what he wants, the game is over, then he can be warm and fuzzy again, say, oh yeah, we love Ron. He did the same thing with Ted Cruz. He accused Ted Cruz's dad of murdering JFK, okay, among other things. And then the primary's over. He calls him Lion Ted. Remember, L-Y-I-N, Lion Ted. And then the primary's over. They patch things up. They have a good working relationship. He goes, I don't call him Lion Ted anymore. He's Beautiful Ted. I call him Beautiful Ted, and they have a good working relationship. I'm doing a lot of Godfather quotes here, but to quote Michael Corleone in The Godfather, it's not personal, Sonny. It's strictly business. That's what it is. And you need this, because DeSantis is a great governor, and he's a prominent figure in the GOP. Trump is the leader of the GOP, undisputed at this point. We got to have all the guns blazing, you know, the political guns aimed on our opponents, not literal guns for the leftists that are going to be clipping out my show as they usually do. But the political guns, the rhetorical guns, they've all got to be aimed on our opponents, not on ourselves, which is what Republicans love to do. We love to turn the guns on each other. You put 100 conservatives in a room, they'll find the one thing they all disagree on. And it's not going to work. You're not going to beat Joe Biden in November that way. So DeSantis and Trump focused on conserving things. Trump just got in trouble for a comment he made about the nature of conserving things, specifically with regard to London and Paris.
Look at Paris. Look at London. They're no longer recognizable. And I'm going to get myself into a lot of trouble with the folks in Paris and the folks in London. But you know what? That's the fact. They are no longer recognizable, and we can't let that happen to our country. We have incredible culture, tradition. Nothing wrong with their culture, their tradition. We can't let that happen here, and I'll never let it happen to the United States of America.
What's wrong with that statement? You know the libs. He says, I'm going to get myself in a lot of trouble with Paris and London. Well, he's already gotten himself in trouble with the left, which has criticized him for this and called him racist. He says, London and Paris are unrecognizable. What do you mean by that? Are you talking about the fact that they've had mass migration for decades now and you can hardly find an Englishman in London anymore? Is that, how dare you? Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with saying that we like things the way they are? And it's not that we don't like foreigners, and it's not like we don't even like foreigners to come in every so often, but I like London. I like England. I like England in part because it's English. I like France and, well, you know, the French are another story. But one likes to visit France because of the French. They're a certain way, and the Italians are a certain way. Just as one likes to visit, I don't know, Japan, because the Japanese are a certain way. And there's a culture, and it doesn't mean that it's entirely total. Well, Japan actually is. They basically don't allow any immigration. But it's not that cultures are totally, entirely rigid. It's not that people can't come in and join a culture. It's the sort of thing we see throughout antiquity. We see it in the Bible that, you know, one can say, well, your people will be my people, your God will be my God. It happens. But that's not a call to just abolish cultures, abolish whole peoples, abolish whole countries. That's crazy. To say, I want London to look like London, I want Paris to look like Paris, I want Djibouti to look like Djibouti, is to say, I kind of like things as they are. And you know what? It's okay to like things as they are. The left doesn't think it's okay. The left always wants you to be angry and upset and resentful and anxious about how, but it's okay to like things as they are. That's a conservative impulse. And maybe you say, well, I'm content in my family and I want to preserve that. Or you might say, you know, I miss the way things were even 5-10 years ago. And I'd like to maybe restore some of what made that moment nicer than this moment. That's a conservative impulse. That's really why the left hates it. And they'll call you racist or whatever for articulating it. Is because that does resonate for a lot of people. And it resonates for people who are generally a little more well-balanced and well-grounded and content. Yeah, it's true. We don't need to constantly be just upending everything and tearing down. It's okay. It's okay to like things the way they are. Now, speaking of cultures changing, this is a weird one. I meant to get to this last week. I'll get to it now, though. There's a Mexican senator who has just ritually sacrificed a chicken to a demon tasked with producing rain. You can see there's a video of it. I probably wouldn't have believed it if I didn't see it. A member of the Mexican Senate going out and ritually sacrificing a chicken to produce rain. And I'm not shocked by it, in as much as this is what they were doing in Mexico before the Spanish got there and before the Christians got there and got rid of the paganism. But now Christianity is waning in certain parts of our civilization and nature abhors a vacuum. So what happens when we turn away from the true God is we get a bunch of false gods and demons, basically. People just worship the demons, and so they return to paganism. But it's even worse than the original paganism because it's a paganism of an apostate civilization. So we actually did worship the true God, and things got a lot better, and we turn away from the true God. We're left even worse than we were before. You see this in Scripture. The man who goes in, he's got a bunch of demons in his house, and he cleans them out, you know, he sweeps everything, and he just, you know, everything's nice and neat. But then he turns away from the faith. And so now you're going to get a bunch more demons who are going to come in because they're going to find a nice, clean, swept house. That's what it's like in our civilization, okay? And you're going to see more of this. I was speaking with a friend of mine last night about it. It is basically impossible to imagine how dark the pagan world was before Christianity came. Especially now because we're taught this nonsense in school that like Christianity is really bad and, you know, oppressed people or whatever, which is all nonsense. But before Christianity in antiquity and then before Christianity made it to the New World, people were regularly murdering their children, regularly sacrificing their children to demons. In this case, I'm glad the Mexican senator is not yet, we still do it today, I guess, through abortion. We sacrifice 800,000 children a year to our false gods, but At least we lie about it to ourselves. Hypocrisy is the tribute vice pays to virtue. At least we pretend that that's not what we're doing. In antiquity and in just in paganism generally, they do it very self-consciously. At least here, the Mexican senator is sacrificing a chicken rather than a baby. But how long is that going to persist before we get even to the fuller, realer paganism? I don't know. I don't know. Our political decay is happening very, very quickly. There's a lot of harm coming to animals. This, you know, it's the chickens, Kristi Noem's dog. Before we get to Kristi Noem, I've got a very special message from our friend Adam Carolla.
Catch the series premiere of Mr. Burcham this Sunday, 9 o'clock, 8 Central, exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. Episode 1 is streaming for free, so no excuses, people. Mr. Burcham is decades in the making, and now it's showtime. Check out the Mr. Burcham trailer and see what the fuss is all about.
Just tell me what you need.
Jump into the first one.
Rolling, speed, action.
Sawbuck's looking a little chubby-wubby.
So I bought him some new food.
It's organic and vegan.
Dogs are supposed to eat meat. They're descendants of wolves. You ever see a vegan wolf on the Nature Channel?
I'm a vegan.
Coffee is for closers, ladies. Listen up!
Hey, don't make this a prison hug.
I'm a heteronormative, cisgendered white male.
For which I apologize.
I'm black, and that used to be enough, but I'm also bilingual, and I'm non-binary.
We're the Army! We drink more before 9 a.m. than you Navy pukes do all day.
He rubbed all the fur off his emotional support ferret. The damn thing looked like a four-legged penis.
Charity and work. Two words that should never go together. Like women and opinions.
I want a burly man. They're salty and make me dizzy.
Sorry, just need to find a thingy to fix my gaming chair.
When I was on the construction site, my chair was a 5-gallon bucket. It was also my toilet.
Hey, I'm done. I'm going back to bed. Thanks a lot.
Remember, Mr. Burcham's series premiere this Sunday, 9 o'clock, 8 Central. Stream it free only on Daily Wire Plus.
Very exciting. My favorite comment on Friday is from Leah Shatsky, 1387, who says, Michael, you're exactly right about generational wealth. It is okay to pass wealth to children so long as they've been taught to manage it. Yes, I know. We're stuck in so many false dichotomies in modern liberal culture. The dichotomy between you can either leave your wastrel kids a ton of money so they can buy drugs and ruin their lives, or don't give them a penny. Keep everything to yourself. Spend it. Die poor. But you know what you could do? There's a third option. You could teach your kids to be good stewards of money, to be responsible, and then leave them that money so that they can do that. That's possible. It is possible.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list. Teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Now, I mentioned Kristi Noem before. I was, I think, the one conservative in America who was sort of defending Kristi Noem over Cricketgate last week. And it was not, I felt it was stupid politically to talk about how she killed her farm dog. I thought it was, you know, not a good calculation. She thought it would make her look tough. It kind of made her look like a psycho. But now it's getting tougher and tougher to defend Kristi Noem. Because after Cricketgate, she just suffered this unforced error. In the book in which she talks about shooting her dog, she also talks about meeting Kim Jong-un, which is something I had never heard that she did. So CBS News asked her about this, and her answer is one of the strangest answers I've ever seen in politics.
You talk about meeting some world leaders and one specific one. Quote, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un, I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. I've been a children's pastor, after all. Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
You know, I've met with many, many world leaders, I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted.
What? Huh? So there are two possibilities for what happened here. First is, we know she did not write this book. None of these politicians write their own books. Very few do. Senator Cruz, for instance, will write. The Senator Cruz will acknowledge, I'll sometimes work with a writer or an editor, but then he'll go in. I just happen to know this personally. He'll go in and extensively rewrite. But, you know, Senator Cruz he's like a Princeton debate champion. You know, he's the kind of guy who's going to write his own book. The vast majority of politicians hire some ghostwriter. Not only do they never write their books, they probably never read their book. And so that's one possibility here. She hired a ghostwriter. The ghostwriter threw in this weird anecdote. It didn't happen. Now they've got to take it out. And it's really embarrassing. And she didn't want to cop to the fact that she obviously hired a ghostwriter and probably hadn't read her own book. So now she has to dance around and say, oh, yeah, no, the editors removed that. I've met with many world leaders. Yeah, but did you meet with the one you said? I met. It was confusing. I took it out. Okay, that's one. The other possibility, and I guess this one would be even weirder. Did she meet with Kim Jong-un? She might have met with Kim Jong-un. The only way I think she would have met with Kim Jong-un is if she had joined President Trump on his trip to North Korea. Remember, during the Trump administration, Trump went over and met with Kim Jong-un. And I guess, I don't know, she was a Republican governor. I guess she could have joined that. We didn't hear about her joining that trip. It's possible that she did. And then maybe she would have met him there. And then maybe she wouldn't want it in the book because she didn't want to say that she went on the trip with, I don't see any world in which she met with Kim Jong-un apart from the Trump trip. Right, she's the governor of a small state. That wouldn't make any sense. And then she didn't want it in there because it had to do with the Trump trip and it wasn't publicized or something. Probably the more likely story is she never met with Kim Jong-un and it just the ghostwriter threw it in there. The only reason I think maybe there's a chance she did and she accompanied Trump or something is it's a weird story to make up. What kind of ghostwriter worth his salt would just make that up? That's crazy. It's obviously an historically verifiable episode. And it's obviously one that is of public interest. So I have no idea. The whole thing is really weird. Kristi Noem clearly only wrote this book because she wants to be the vice president or president someday. And I just, every anecdote that comes out of the book seems to make that less and less likely. Now, obviously, there are political forces right now who are trying to shoot Kristi Noem down because they want someone else to be the vice president. But this is bizarre stuff. Whatever the explanation, really, really sloppy, does not show great political instincts, and probably not going to turn out well. Listen, I guess I'm the number one Kristi Noem defender in the country. As I said, in principle, there's nothing wrong with shooting a farm dog on a farm. But there is something wrong with making up a meeting with Kim Jong-un or of having actually met with him and then taking out the episode. I don't know. The whole thing's a little weird.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Now, what does this all come down to, this whole culture war? The culture war between the left and the right, the culture war between the pro-Palestine people on the college campuses and the pro-Israel people, the culture war between, you know, the guys wearing the American flag overalls and the pro-Gaza protest. The Mexican senator sacrificing a chicken to a demon. What it comes down to is something that John Cleese from Monty Python has just gotten a big deal of trouble for observing, which is that some cultures are superior to others. And we were not allowed to say that for a long time. We were stuck in a period of cultural relativism. But now I think we're back to being able to admit that some cultures are superior to others. We can't get into this story. You know I'm quite a tease, so we'll have to get into that story tomorrow. The rest of the show continues now. You do not want to miss it. Become a member. Use code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, to check it for 2 months free on all annual plans.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.